So I was looking at the back, and I saw this perfect way to start this year, insights from the Dalai Lama. The whole point of transforming our heart and mind is to find happiness. We all have a natural desire to be happy and the wish to overcome suffering. This is a fact, so we can make it our starting point. In this time of the year's transition, we've already transitioned. It's already a new year. Oh, eight. That's a really wonderful place to start, with a real strong intention towards happiness. Whether you find happiness through James's Awakening Joy class, which is really a way to cultivate that, or through being kind to yourself, start there, start right there. And then it's able to go out. There's not really a title to this talk tonight. It's just kind of like what's been going on in my life. But there's almost a talk, a title, which is Why I Wake Early. So I thought I'd start by reading this poem, because I've been awakening early. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star. That just happens to be where you are in the universe, to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness. When I went on retreat at the end of November, beginning of December, I came back and I talked about, I think, the fact that there was a lot of devotion practice on this retreat. There was chanting and there was bowing practice that was really very beautiful and very moving to me. And there was this strong emphasis on Kuan Yin, who is the feminine face of the Buddha, who is the archetype of compassion, who hears the cries of the world. And I was really quite moved by the teachings and that devotion, something that I haven't really felt in practice. I've been on different retreats and felt stirred and moved by chanting, especially kirtan. But that Kuan Yin wasn't it for me. I think I said here too, had a kind of a close feeling to childhood Catholicism and, you know, saint worship, deity, Mary worship. But there was something that really resonated with me. And I told a friend about Kuan Yin, about a book on Kuan Yin. At night, I would read at night about all these different versions of Kuan Yin. And I like the one that sits like me. I sit like this because I have a knee injury. But I like the Kuan Yin that sits like this. And so I was really happy when a friend of mine brought me a, not Kuan Yin, but a green Tara, which is another face of Kuan Yin. I sit like this. The version that I have at home now as part of a new altar is with her hand like this. And when the teacher, Kitty Sorrow, talked about Kuan Yin, he talked about her having a gift, what's that? Gift showering hands. So it's just showering hands, showering gifts through her hands. I think that's beautiful. I think we really touch the world. in our manifestations of compassion, which is really what we are. We're human beings, we're in bodies, but these are bodies that when hindrances, clouds, there's clouds that cover, are blown away, what's left is wisdom and compassion. That's all that's left. So I have this little setup now, right by my bed, this altar chair, so I don't have to go downstairs, and so that Obi, my dog, doesn't hear me, so I can get up and sit right away. And so I've been waking up early, and it's been really wonderful just to sit before the sun comes out, up, and then to watch it come up. Mark was saying that he watched the sun go down on New Year's, and the sun coming up is just as magical, in a different kind of, in a different view. So when I got this cancer diagnosis 2 weeks ago, breast cancer, that word cancer is a big word. It's really a big word. At first I thought, oh, I like the word breast cancer better. I mean, truly, it was like, I have breast cancer. That sounds better to me than cancer. But it was an interesting way that I received the news. Today, I read something that said, big, bold words, always have the doctor give you the diagnosis. Well, the doctor didn't give me the diagnosis. My husband gave me the diagnosis because he had gotten it before me. Since it was just before Christmas, I called my doctor and said, and they were saying, you probably won't find out until after Christmas. Well, my life during these days before Christmas involved my sister and brother-in-law coming, my son and his fiance coming, an engagement party, multiple events, and if possible, I really want to know. And quite honestly, I already knew, so I was just waiting for this confirmation, and how I knew, I don't know. I think it has something to do with that Kuan Yin resonance. I don't know how or why, but it was such a strong resonance. I just feel that. So I said, leave the message on our home answering tape, or call my husband, because I have to tell you, I have a cell phone, but I don't use it. I don't like to use it. I don't want anyone to have it. As Eric said, well, is it really fair? You're always on my hip. You can always call me, but I can't get in touch with you. I was like, yeah, it's fair. So I said, she could call Eric and give him the message. So Eric got the message that I had breast cancer while I was picking my son up at the airport and taking him to lunch, getting china and silver for an engagement party, and driving to Nevada, where my daughter lives. And my son was tired. He's a drummer, so I said, went to bed at 2, got up at 5 to get here from Austin, and go take a nap. So he's taking a nap, and I'm waiting for my daughter, who said, just stay here. I want to see you before you go home. And so I called Eric at home, and ring, ring, answered. But since I was calling from my daughter's phone, he thought that I was my daughter and got really emotional and hung up because he couldn't talk. And Eric's a really good guy, a really balanced guy, a really strong, emotionally stable guy, and he was really shaken. So he hung up, but okay, so I called back from, I guess, my cell phone, and he wasn't talking. He couldn't talk. I'm saying, Eric, are you there? And he just started to cry and cry and cry. And I said, what's the matter? He was like, high alert, what's the matter? And he's not saying anything. He says, you have to come home. It's like, I have to come home? You have to come home. And I said, what's the matter? Something wrong with Obi? Our dog, and I said, no, Obi's okay. I said, did your mother die? You know, it's like, what happened? And he said, it's you. I said, it's me. And he said, yes, you have cancer. And it's like, I have cancer? And it was just like, and I said, oh, it's okay. I already know. Because I really did know. I just knew. And so that was like the introduction to, it is good to get the call from your doctor. I think I could have heard it a little easier than Eric. And he's really sorry it came through that way, but it just made me see how much he loves me, you know. So it was just a beautiful thing. It was very moving, and it's a weird thing to get that kind of message. And he said, and it's not a good kind. It's not good. And it's like, it's invasive. And it's like, invasive, that word is huge. I've learned a lot more since then. Yet it is an invasive type. I love hearing that cancer, you know, the idea of it is like tentacles, you know, it's like, ooh, that's why partially it's so scary. So, you know, I lead these groups called A Year to Live. And, you know, it's been 10 years since I started the first Year to Live group, just about 10 years. And I have so much gratitude. Really a lot of gratitude for that, for Stephen Levine, for that book, for that practice. And when you get the diagnosis, it's still like, what? It's actually kind of like impossible. It's still kind of impossible. Oh, and of course, well, maybe not of course, but I took it as, oh. And then I called the doctor and found out, yes, it isn't a good type. And I took it like, oh, I'm going to die. It's like, oh, I'm going to die, and I could actually have a year to live. And what came in the first couple of days was like, so how many people have been on retreat? What came in the first couple of days, this thought, and the first day, actually, the first hour, it's just going to be freedom, just complete freedom. You know, it's just pure love. No, nothing in the way. You know, this is what it's going to be like. Well, you know, here it is almost 2 weeks later, and I can tell you there's been, you know, stuff. But that's like on retreat, if you're just, you know, free. Just there are some times where there is total freedom. It doesn't last forever. Yet it's an enlightenment. And this experience I'm now in is also an enlightenment that comes and goes, like the sun that comes and goes. It comes in the morning and goes down at night. It comes and goes. So my friend who gave me the green tarot then gave me a Kuan Yin. And it was her Kuan Yin. So I have a green tarot, a Kuan Yin, a butterfly from my daughter, a painting from my friend, a little bracelet, a little butterfly on my feet, butterflies for Mark, you know, all this, like, these love gifts in this altar, and it feels good to sit there. It feels really, really good to sit there. I'm going to be writing an article, I was asked to write an article for Inquiring Mind on, appropriately, the Four Heavenly Messengers will be the next series, article, newspaper. When the Bodhisattva started on his journey, when he finally left pleasure, only pleasure did he know until he was 29 years old. Only pleasure. Kept a prisoner of pleasure. You know, that thing that we go for all the time. Think of how often we go towards pleasant pleasure. When he finally walked out the gates, he met four heavenly messengers. And the first was birth. I don't know. He actually was a father. But supposedly this myth story teaching. I guess he didn't know what birth was all about. I'm not sure how that happened. But birth was suffering. He saw birth. He saw someone be born and saw that woman hurting. And I think we're pretty lucky that we don't remember being born, because it mustn't feel too good to get squeezed out. You know, our heads are pretty big and our shoulders are pretty big, even at birth. I mean, all that squeezing. So we're born in suffering, literally into this body. We're born in suffering into this body. We're born in suffering every time we create a sense of self. Because we claim. It's just because we claim that we create this me, this solid me. And then he saw someone who was old, an old person. So anyone, I'm going to step back. Anyone with a birth story? Anyone had a baby? Yeah? So? Come on, mothers. Any suffering? Yeah. Any suffering, Beth?
Well, you know, I don't remember it, but it did last for 3 days. So, you know, it's just a lot of waiting, and then, yeah, and then I don't remember.
Just get to forget it.
Isn't that wonderful? No, you
didn't forget it. That was a long time ago. It's like a freight train going right through you. I mean, you feel like you're being split, you know, wide open. That's what it was. It's big pain. Mm-hmm.
For men in the groups, I heard it described as somebody taking your lip and pulling it up over your head. So,
I'm one of those fortunate people that have very, very short labor. And so in the days that I had my children, the labor was so short that I didn't feel a thing because they drugged me. Mm-hmm. So my memory is it wasn't painful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was high. And I think I sang a lot. I think it was sodium pentothal they gave in those days. So, I talked and sang a lot, and it was over very fast. So
kept nothing
just,
in.
I was just fortunate in that it was a really okay experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would have been without the drug, but in those days, that's what they gave you when your delivery was really fast. They gave you sodium pentothal.
Well, my doctor didn't believe in drugs. It didn't hurt. I can say that. And so then the Buddha saw an old person, really old and crippled and in a lot of pain. Anyone's body changing here? Anyone aging here? No matter how old we are? Any aging bodies?
Just growing pains.
Growing pains. And then he saw a corpse. If you're hanging out in India now, even death isn't hidden. It was behind the palace walls, but out in the streets, death was visible. And it's like, this is life. This protected, princely, indulged, and indulgent man saw that, what do you know, the beginning of seeing that the truth of the First Noble Truth, that there's suffering, that there's unsatisfactoriness in life, unsatisfactoriness, which you could call stress. The stress of childbirth, the stress of aging, the stress leading to death, who knows what happens after that. But then he saw an ascetic, a wandering ascetic. Like, oh, who's this guy? This guy was looking pretty peaceful. What's he doing? He's wandering. He talked to him. What are you doing? He wanted to wake up. He wanted to become free. Free from the rounds of birth, old age, death. Free. So the Buddha left it all. He left his son and his wife. He left every pleasure behind and went way over to one side of denying the body. Just denying the body in every way he could, denying, went from one really extreme to another, which often, if you think about your life, I know in my life I've done before, from one extreme to the other. Well, as an aside, the thought of people who become sometimes teetotalers without the support, I'm thinking of our president for one, can kind of go over on the onto a what's called a dry drunk, where you have there's all the emotional components left over that get really pushed down and manifest in other ways. So we have war. Sometimes better to meet what's here. Always better to meet what's here. So the Buddha took off, and that's really what started his search, to the point where he sat under a tree and after realizing that that was not the way, and woke up to the truth, the four truths of the way life is, that life is unsatisfactory because, he used the word earlier, wait. You're waiting. He used that word. We're waiting a lot for something else to happen. Or we're that's the process I'm in now. I'm realizing, okay, just be present. Waiting is really a drag. When you're waiting for something to happen. So today I went to a doctor and I found out, finally got to see a doctor, and found out that, you know, I'll have to have a lumpectomy and radiation, and then go from there to see if I need chemo and hormone. I'd already known that I've become really smart in the last 12 days. Really learned a lot about breast cancer. You know, you find some, you get a diagnosis. Oftentimes you look into it. So that's what the Buddha, that's what the four heavenly messengers were really about. It was like the Buddha got a diagnosis. He got a diagnosis. He said, this is what life's about. It's about birth. It's about getting old. It's about dying. It's about suffering. Okay, we're also saying the whole point of transforming our heart and mind is to find happiness. It's called freedom, right in the midst of it all. But there's also the wanting to get off this wheel. There's this wanting to get off this wheel of never-ending selfing. Selfing, doesn't it get tiring? Doesn't it? Why do we practice? That's the real big question. Why do we practice? To find a little relief, a little relief for a couple of hours a week, a month? What is this about? Really, is there a calling in the heart that's wanting some resolution, it's wanting some, you know, let's decide. How about this one? Connection to something deeper. So that's the question. That's the real question. On Sunday, I went to hear a Tibetan teacher, a Rinpoche, who is just this light, very delightful 40-year-old, bright-eyed fellow. And his whole Dharma talk was really two things that I got from it. One, which is the whole teaching of non-effort. Non-effort. You know, we think this path is about efforting. You know, it's like, oh, ooh, ooh, why didn't I, ooh. You know, it's like, oh, lust, oh, greed, aversion, ooh. You know, and the pull on the heart. That's what I've been finding these last 12 days. A pull on the heart. It's really interesting how body-centered this news has been. Such freedom in many, many moments, and tightness in the heart that doesn't even sometimes have a word. Sometimes it's sadness. Sometimes it's fearing. But it's just like, it's like coming out of a long retreat when the first waves of disagreement hit. It's like, ooh, right in the heart. Ooh, it's painful. It's painful. Happiness right in the center of all of this is really possible. And honestly, I found a lot of freedom in this. It's a huge question. Remind me of your name.
Pete.
A real big question that Pete was and I were talking about at our time to talk of why is it when we hear that someone has something that's life-threatening that you feel more connected, more compassion, more love, more caring. You know, my husband is like absolutely fallen madly in love with me all over again. And it's like it takes the blinders off. It really takes the blinders off. The blinders of the heart. I mean, this is, I don't know, do you feel in the heart? Do you feel in the belly? Where do you feel? Where do you feel?
The heart? Definitely feeling it for you, Bonnie.
Yeah. And, you know, one amazing thing is what a challenge it is to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a challenge to be the center of attention. And I like being the center of attention. You know, I mean, I love to dance and I love to, you know, I love to teach. I always feel that I'm the clearest when, you know, I'm not teaching and just get out of the way. But to be in my son's engagement party and have people want to talk about me was like, but I walked in, I heard the best wisdom on Christmas Eve when I went, on Christmas Eve I go to my friend Jane and James Barrow's house and then go to the Unitarian Church in Kensington. Anyone ever go there for Christmas Eve? It's wonderful. Go next year if you're here. There's 600, I thought there were 300, there's 600 long white candles, and people walk up and make wishes, send intentions. And the lights go down, and it's just these beautiful candles. And people sing Christmas carols, you know, O Holy Night, which is my favorite. I love that. And, you know, all the beautiful ones. It's a beautiful ceremony. So when we walked into this small gathering, maybe 12 people or 14 people, it was like, and I know everyone, it was like everyone looking at me. Mm-hmm. So I just wound up, after saying hello, I went over to James, and we just hugged. And really, it was a great hug, just a good, good hug. How are you doing? I said, I'm doing okay, you know, I'm doing okay. But my heart was feeling pain. And I said, he said, you have a lot of love coming your way. And I said, I know it can be difficult. I said, it can be a lot. And he said, just let it go right through you. Mm. He said, don't hold on to any of it. Just let it go right through you. And something about those words were like the perfect words at the right time. Just let it all go right through you. And it was like the heart just went, and even saying it, you know, it's like, oh, we don't own anything. We don't own anything. We don't own love. We don't own compassion. It's just when the heart wakes up, it's what's there. It's what's there. The wisdom of seeing clearly birth, suffering, old age, or the body, you know, death. They're big wake-up calls. And we respond to it. You know? It's like it's the responding of the heart. When we really see, yeah, this is going to happen to, believe it or not, you. You know? Each one of us. That piece of waiting, I find, you may find this too, that sometimes there's this wanting something else to happen. You know, it's like, okay, want to know, like, what do you mean I went today and I have to wait for Health Net to approve it? And that's going to take 2 weeks. It's like, oh. And then we have to wait for the, you know, it's like, this is going to take, let's see, 2 up to 4 weeks for surgery. It's like, okay, can't do anything about it. When you realize you have no control, when you really get it, the tendency to be to try to grab onto anything, or with any amount of grace, to let go. So today I ate chocolate. And I thought, oh, maybe I can go to Hawaii. You know, really, these were the thoughts before I finally stopped. It's like, I can't do anything. You know, this is what it is at this point. So, I think that's Sambhaga. You remember that word? Sambhaga. You want to say what it is?
I don't remember what it is. I remember the word.
Love the word. Pasada and Sambhaga. So I'll read definitions. Meeting the Divine Messengers by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Where is this one? Before, instead of letting our lives be consumed by transient trivia, by things that are here today and gone tomorrow, we must give weight to what really counts. To aims and actions that will exert a lasting influence upon our long-range destinies, upon our final destiny in this life, and upon our ultimate direction in the cycle of repeated birth and death. You don't have to go along with the repeated birth and death. You can go along with the repeated birth of every time you claim is a birth. Every time. Before such a revaluation takes place, we generally live in a condition that the Buddha describes by the term pamada, not pasada, pamada, negligence or heedlessness, imagining ourselves immortal and the world our personal playground. We devote our energies to the accumulation of wealth, the enjoyment of sensual pleasures, the achievement of status, the quest for fame and renown. The remedy for heedlessness is the very same quality that was aroused in the Bodhisattva when he met the divine messengers in the streets of Kapalavatthu. This quality, called in Pali Samvega, is a sense of urgency, an inner commotion or shock, which is actually what I felt, a shock, which does not allow us to rest content with our habitual adjustment to the world. Instead, it drives us on out of our cozy palaces and into unfamiliar jungles to work out with diligence an authentic solution to our existential plight. So here we sit in front of the fire, and I've thought of this before when those sparks come. You know, one time when I sat here and it wasn't closed, hearing those pops, like, okay. You know, it's like, ooh, the Buddha talked about practicing as if your hair is on fire. How does that balance with no effort? That's the big question. That's the question. That is the question. Carry on with diligence is the last thing the Buddha said. Carry on with diligence and let go. Let go, because there's nothing to hold on to. That can sound scary, but under all of this commotion, all of this juggling, is being. It's being. Any time a thought comes, any time an emotion comes that gets you, that clutch at your heart or your belly or your head, ask where it came from. Ask where it came from, and just sit with that spaciousness. Just now for a minute, just close your eyes. And just feel your heart. You wake up in the body. In this precious human birth, where do you spend your time? What's really important? What do you cling to? Now see if you can just sit. Hear the buzz, hear the fire. Any thoughts? Time for thoughts. Anything to say? Yeah.
Deep gratitude to you. What a beautiful talk.
Thank you. You know, gratitude is an incredible practice. I have deep gratitude too for all of us here. We get such warm and loving messages, and I'm really grateful. It means a lot. Really means a lot.
I was going to say also, I appreciate your courage and your honesty. So it's amazing. It's true. It's amazing to me. I mean, there's so many times that I want to say things and I just don't.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
And I value it a lot.
Yeah.
I truly value it. Well, it's, why do I not? Mm-hmm. You know, I've never had trouble not. But in these settings, I feel like, I don't know, that there's this line. I've never had trouble talking about my feelings. Yeah. Until I started. I mean, I don't have trouble talking about it, but in meditation groups, I do. It doesn't...
What is that? What do you think that?
Because there's this, there's this line between a therapy group and a meditation group, and I don't want to step in. And then, there's this thing about, we don't want to hear the story, don't do the story, which I understand, and I understand the difference. Mm-hmm. But you have to do a bit of story, otherwise it's meaningless. Mm-hmm. To just say I'm suffering doesn't mean a damn thing unless you give a little bit. You don't have to go into he said, she said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it doesn't feel like there's room for that kind of thing. And then I got a little cowardly, I guess. But mm-hmm. I truly appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I used to go to Sylvia Borstein's teaching James's class tomorrow night. So if you feel like going over there to the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery, Sylvia would love it. I used to go to Sylvia's class all the time, every Wednesday when I lived in West Marin. And she never gave a Dharma talk. This was before she got famous. Wrote books. She never gave a Dharma talk. They were usually about as many people as there are here. Around 20 usually. And all we did was tell our stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we did. And then Sylvia would weave it into a Dharma talk at the end. It was just beautiful. I remember distinctly the shift that happened when Sylvia got famous. And there got to be a lot of people, and then there were Dharma talks, and Sylvia's wonderful, but the intimacy of that little group, with people sharing so much from the heart, wasn't there for me, at least.
Well, one of the most amazing things that was the experience of being in the DPP program for me was having that experience of being part of a group where, over a period of 2 years, people were telling their stories, and somehow like a year into it, it just suddenly sank in that it didn't matter who was talking, it was my suffering. And all the stories were the same, and they were all, but they all had different flavors and textures and touched your heart in different ways. But it was, there was just this dropping off of individual identities in the midst of these very individual stories, and really a way of accessing that ability to have compassion that I had never experienced before. And it was through that repeated exposure to suffering in all its different faces that was so amazing.
And my experience in that too was that there was a lot of joy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you're able to say it, touch it, smell it, that lock, it's just not there anymore.
Well, it starts to go right through you, just like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like the receiving love can just go right through you, you don't have to hang on to it. So can the receiving self.
Sometimes.
Yeah. It's quite something how reality is a great promotional tool for your Year to Live group. the diagnosis is, whatever the diagnosis is, as we are made aware of them, they blow away that cloud of delusion that hides our mortality from us. Mm-hmm. And it kicks in that sambhaga, the urgency to give love, to express it, and to express the heart things that we're not conditioned to express as freely as the ego things that we do tend to. But I like that term, sambhaga, the urgency, and the Year to Live program that you teach is so wonderful at letting us recognize that we don't have to wait for the diagnosis. We can take that cork out of the bottle and offer that love freely and accept it freely too. Mm-hmm. You have mine flowing through you. And thank you for showing us that the sambhag is always there, even when the clouds of delusion are too. Mm-hmm.
Any other words?
Beth. How can we support you?
They're coming here when I teach. I love it. I mean, truly. It's like, really, I looked at it. It's like, first of all, what do I do? Really? You know, it's like, what should I do? What can I do now? You know, it's like, well, I'm not going to teach the mindfulness-based stress reduction series that I was planning to start teaching, you know, and interviewing 28 people who have pretty severe dukkha, you know, coming into a pretty severe stress. So I'm not going to do that in this first 3 months of the year. Though it gives, you know, both ways, but I do qigong, right? But, you know, and I just thought, absolutely, Wednesday night, gotta, you know.
Do you want us to make food for you, or, I'm really serious.
I'll let you know whenever I get the Health Net approval.
You still
going to
be able to do
your
retreat?
See, that's the thing that today I had to face. It was like, So I was going back and forth. It's like, my intention has been to go to the Forest Refuge for a month in April. You know, I've like really worked to switch things around to be able to do it. And today it's like, that was a big part of this, like, oh, I want to know. If I could do it now, I could do this, and then I could be done with that radiation, and I could go through. And it's like, Eric said, I said, I don't know, I think I could still go on the April retreat. And he said, you have to let go of that. He said, that's going to keep you. It's like, and the minute I went, oh, I'm not going to go on that retreat, it was like, oh. And then, maybe I will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, maybe I'll sneak into a different retreat. You know, just, like, I don't know. You know, see, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Don't know. Mm-hmm. We really don't know. I'm with the Year to Live group that's going through the dying process on Tuesday. But someone wound up in a murder trial. So, should we postpone dying? What should we do? So we'd be going back and forth. Go, I'll know by January 2nd if the murder trial's over by January 4th. And it's like, can everybody else keep that date? Can we keep the date, maybe, and then plan for January 29th? It's like, okay, two dying days, this and this. And somebody, meanwhile, said, you know, hey, I'm going to go on this conference on January 8th. I'm just going to assume it's not going to happen. So I wrote back and I said, you know, I think it's going to be January 8th. She wrote back and I said, maybe we could try it. She wrote back and she said, I'm just going to stop trying, this is how she put it, trying to thread every needle. Mm-hmm. It was like she just tried too hard and she's going to miss out. And it's like, I can notice that tendency in me, you know, like, so, don't know. All right, let's sit together. Maybe before we completely end, Kevin will get this bowl to sing again. Bestowing hands. Just feel your heart. Maybe ending in metta together would be nice. Just feel your heart. And if you don't feel this huge surge of loving kindness, don't worry about it. Just, that's the way it is. May we be safe from inner harm, of the hindrances that cloud the mind and heart, and from outer harm. May we be truly happy. The happiness that comes from not clinging and making things other than they are because we can't. May we be healthy. Healthy. It's the same word as healing, as holy. Health, heal, whole, holy. May we know the wholeness, that we're a part of. May we be at ease without efforting. And bringing our mind, our thoughts, our heart to all beings, regardless of their, of our unclarity. May all beings be filled with love and kindness. May all beings wake up to their true nature, which is beyond the rounds of birth, sickness, old age, and death. May the merit from our practice be shared with everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.